streaming has gotten way too complicated, but you can hack the system with Prime Video. It has everything in one app with one password. See Roadhouse, Giannis, The Marvelous Journey, and the National Women's Soccer League, all included with Prime. Plus, you can buy Premier Boxing or stream the NHL and NBA playoffs on Max with the Bleacher Report Sports add-on, or add Paramount Plus for the Masters on CBS. Prime Video. It's all your favorite content in one place. Restrictions apply. Prime membership required for add-on subscriptions. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
Lily Herman, my co-host in season one, helped me choose a team, a driver, and then...
Well, we sent you on your jolly way.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
I'm Michael Costa, comedian, Daily Show correspondent.
And we're back with season two because, as it turns out, F1's newest fan is still a little...
dazed and confused.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1 as we dive deeper into the rabbit hole of the pinnacle of motorsports.
Who makes money here?
What's CFD?
How do you manage a tire?
You, get back in there.
What are the rumors? What's the gossip? But you also know that someone's listening to your radio.
I'm going to pull up a picture of a tea cozy. I want to see what this thing looks like.
Are you going to be doing that accent this whole pod?
Listen to season two of Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts. You find it.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to week three of the Sunday recap, where I recap not only the SEC games, but take a little glance around at the national landscape as we move in to week four. One of the biggest things that I took from this weekend, you know, I woke up this morning and really, you know, started to think about it was the amount of parity I feel like we have this year, especially at the top as it funnels toward the middle of college football. You know, typically you have, three, four, maybe even five teams that you're like, all right, we got to put these guys in one corner and everybody else in another one. But the way I'm looking at it right now, especially the way Alabama played yesterday, going to get to my thoughts on them and George and kind of where they stand and how they parlay right now. But I'm loving the ability of anybody to beat anybody at any given time. It seems like the narrative that we're kind of walking into on, you know, during this season, and you're seeing defenses with a spring and a summer and a fall camp, you know, start to be more effective, especially early in games. But I'm loving the playoff talk that's going to be able to be undertaken here soon with teams having one loss. And I think you're going to have a new, fresh team in the playoff or maybe even two. And I want to start off the recap by looking at what I call these fringe games. And what do I mean by fringe games? Well, the games that aren't the biggest game of the week. And I want to start with Chattanooga and Kentucky. And look, this game was tight. I mean, you're looking at 14-10 at halftime. UT Chattanooga ended up taking the lead there in the fourth quarter. Kentucky ended up fighting them off. You know, Will Levis ended up with 254 yards. But when you look at this game kind of in totality, Kentucky coming off that big win against Missouri, kind of sandwiched in between Chattanooga. And look, I think Chattanooga was a little bit better than what everybody thought they were. But there's no excuse for this game to be that close. If you're Mark Stoops, gives you a chance to go back and say, I told you so. You know, Levis ended up with two interceptions. Thought he put a couple balls in harm's way. But what really surprised me was the rushing numbers from this game. I mean, Chattanooga said, all right, well, we're going to try and take away the run. And if Will Levis is going to beat us throwing it around, then he's going to beat us throwing it around. But when Chris Rodriguez is your leading rusher with 13 carries for 46 yards and a long of nine and no scores, that's a problem. And any team that gets turned one-dimensional, we talk about this all the time on the show, any team that ends up being one-dimensional, well, you're cutting off, you know, half of your body. And if you're playing Kentucky going forward, whether it's Florida, and Kentucky's now 3-0, still 1-0 in the SEC, but whether it's Florida, any LSU, any of these teams, you stop Kentucky's run, and you make them one-dimensional with Will Levis. I mean, it worked if you're Chattanooga. Think about that. Chattanooga shut them out in the third quarter, and Kentucky had to score 14 in the fourth quarter to avoid what would have been a catastrophic upset. And we'll get to the schedule and kind of where, you know, Kentucky falls in the depth of their schedule and kind of the breadth of it and how tough it is as the rest of the year goes. Now, a guy that we have on the show all the time, Connor Bazelak, dropped a 346 burger on SEMO, Southeast Missouri State. Missouri won that one going away. They're up 38-0 at halftime. Ended up winning 59-28. And look, Missouri's going to be competitive this year. You know, we've had that debate with Missouri and Florida, and we'll get to the Florida-Alabama game, and I want to make sure everybody understands something on that. But this Missouri team is sneaky. You know, offensively with Beatty, we all know how good Bazelak is. Thought, you know, he's had a pretty good start to the year. Really loved his toughness at Kentucky. That was a heck of a game. But look, Missouri to me is a third to fifth type SEC East team. I don't see them having the juice to be second in the East. But in this crazy football season, who really knows? But Southeast Missouri State falls to 0-3. Like I said, Missouri just handled business there. Tennessee and Tennessee Tech. Tennessee bouncing back after that Pitt loss, winning 56-0. Hendon Hooker was the guy. They shut him out. It's great. It's always tough to do. You're up 28-0 at half. He really went 28-28 in each half. It was pretty even. But Tennessee's got to find a quarterback in big games that's going to be able to make these throws if you're going to operate at this pace. I still don't know how, with the lack of depth and personnel you have on defense, you survive in games against teams that are able to score points consistently against you. I still don't see it, at least until you have your personnel in there. And then I still think it's an unbelievably risky style of offense, the warp speed style of offense nonstop, to put your defense, you know, in that position to where you're not getting a lot of time to rest. And if you're not scoring, you're going to be behind the eight ball. That's why I think, you know, second halves for Tennessee are going to be a big problem. And like I said, we'll get to the schedule for next week and where it falls for Tennessee. But they bounce back 2-1 with the 56-0 win over Tennessee Tech. Now, in College Station, been a lot of talk about the run game for A&M. Calzada starting because Haynes King's hurt. They beat New Mexico 34-0. But looking at the numbers, if you're an A&M fan, and it's still looking wide open to me in a lot of places in the SEC. But if you're an A&M fan and you're looking at these numbers, Calzada 19 for 33, 275 yards, three touchdowns and a pick. When Calzada has time to set his feet, he's really good. He's really good. But watching him, when he misses high. And a lot of people do. A lot of pitchers in baseball, when they miss, they're going to miss high. Well, when you miss high, especially over the middle, that puts the ball in harm's way. And the one thing that worries me about Calzada is he's not a great runner, so you already know what he is and how to play him. But if he's having to move while the ball's being thrown, or he's having to change his launch point, I don't know if he's great at changing his arm angle to be able to make throws. He's got a cannon. He can stand tall back there and deliver it and put his weight into it. He can really spin it. He's got a cannon. But when he's having to move and do things on the run like you're going to have to do in these elite games, I question his ability to fit the ball where he needs to fit. Now, you know, we talked about the run game a ton for A&M. A ton. Was it great Saturday? Spiller went, you know, had 15 carries, 117 yards, a touchdown, a long of 46. I still think there's problems in that run game. And until that gets fixed or becomes a preeminent threat or a predominant threat, I don't see A&M beating Bama. I just don't. And if you looked at Alabama yesterday, if I'm an A&M fan or I'm a Georgia fan, you say, okay, well, looks like you can run the ball against them. That's the perfect recipe. But if the offensive line is going to struggle and it's going to be a stalemate there, you're going to lose that advantage. And against Alabama, every lost advantage can cost you the game. Not only the game, but can cost you the competitiveness of the game, of you being able to stay in the game. We're going to keep talking about it with A&M. We're going to keep talking about it. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're either going to do it or you're not. Because if you're one-dimensional, you're dead. That'll be the theme you'll see of this recap. All right, Mississippi State and Memphis. We had Coach Leach on this past week. You know, watching Mississippi State early in this game, got up 17-7 at half, then get shut out in the third quarter. And Coach Leach talked about this team, you know, the mentality of this team, being able to put consistent quarters together. I mean, Will Rogers ends up with 419 pass yards, and all that's great, but you scored 12 points in the second half. And look, Mississippi State, we talked about, they came out against La Tech and struggled week one, ended up coming back and winning that game, then had a pretty decent win the next week against NC State, but nobody wanted to talk about it. And when you look at Mississippi State, and you look at this team, you look at the personnel, I still just don't know how you can have success in this league and just try and smoke draw people to death in the run game. I mean, Will Rogers threw it 67 times and was pretty efficient. 50 of 67 for 419 yards and 3 touchdowns. Let me put that in perspective. The Hennigan kid from Memphis threw 28 passes. So you could have doubled Hennigan's passes attempt and still been 11 passes short of the amount of passes Will Rogers attempted. It's wild. It's wild. I mean, a running back, Johnson, ends up with 7 carries for 50 yards and a touch. Mississippi State, to me, and here's where the air raid, and we talk about this on the show all the time. Here is where the air raid kind of falls short, in my opinion, in the red zone. In the red zone. Well, you're throwing for 419 yards and this, that, and the other. Well, when you get squeezed from the 20 in, not that air raid concepts don't work, because every concept can work, but in my opinion, you don't have as much to go to the bag to and as much to depend on because you can't really run the ball. Not only can you not really run the ball, the defense knows you can't really run the ball. See, what makes Ole Miss so deadly in the red zone is that while they pass to run, it's not an overwhelming pass to run, and the threat of the run is still there. That's what makes them so dangerous. So in Mississippi State's case, I can load up against the pass, and if you want to run smoke draw, that's fine. But in Ole Miss's case, they've got no problem lining up and running it 5 times in a row and being effective at it. So that's the difference right now outside of personnel, too, in Memphis and in Mississippi State and Ole Miss. And you go to Arkansas, and the party's still going on in Fayetteville. They rolled Georgia Southern 45-10. They're up 24-10 at halftime and shut them out in the second half, beating them 21-0. In the second half. And look, here's the story for Arkansas. KJ Jefferson threw for 366, was a good confidence day. KJ Jefferson's still the same KJ Jefferson. The guy can load up and fire rifle shots down, you know, deep, vertically. Still not super accurate with it, but his arm range is ridiculous. But he still struggles a little bit with those intermediate and short throws. And he's going to continue to progress as a passer. Where I want to see KJ Jefferson take the next step is very similar to where I want to see Zach Calzada take the next step. And that's being able to throw accurately on the run. And I'm not talking about 40 yards down the field. It doesn't have to be that deep down the field. What I'm talking about is when you're in the pocket, being able to throw that dig and not overthrow it. Being able to throw the out and sail and get it there. Taking the 5-yard hitch and not having to throw it 800 miles per hour left or right of somebody, because there's still those throws. There was one that KJ had yesterday where the guy was wide open on the over. And it wasn't like he changed his motion, but it was like he kind of reverted a little bit instead of setting his shoulders. He still has to become a more pure thrower of the ball. Does he have the ability? Yes. Is he getting unbelievably valuable experience? Yes. Is it great to have to learn things, while you're on the run? Yes. When you're winning. And against Texas, we all knew that Arkansas could only really run the ball. And Texas knew that Arkansas could only really run the ball. And they were able to run the ball with ease. This game against Georgia Southern was about, reminding KJ Jefferson that he's a good passer. And this is a huge mental game, in my opinion, for Arkansas and KJ Jefferson. Because looking at the schedule, this week you got a huge one in Arkansas and A&M. And A&M's defense is very stout. I don't see Arkansas being able to run the ball the way they did against Texas, against A&M like that. So KJ Jefferson's going to have to make some of those throws. And we're going to see he's going to be put in a position where he's going to have to throw them to a win. And can he do it? Dora the Explorer, or Bob the Builder, I guess, yes, yes, he can. Yes, we can. But I think it's going to take the game of his life from a throwing standpoint, because I still just don't think he's consistent enough to be able to throw you to wins in tough games. Now, Central Michigan and LSU. This is one I thought, you know, that Central Michigan played pretty well against Missouri. The Sermon kid at quarterback, you know, he's one of the top three quarterbacks in the country coming out. And LSU did a really good job from the jump. They just jumped them. They just jumped them. You look up, you get a defensive score, you're up 21-0, and then you got Central Michigan scrambling the whole time. I mean, LSU scored 35 in the first half, broke even with them in the second half, just trying to get through it. Max Johnson had 5 touchdowns. And I was surprised at the way that Central Michigan came out, for lack of a better term. You know, they are a somewhat veteran group, but I thought they tried to force a lot early. You know, if you go back and you watch the Missouri game, they were taking what Missouri was giving them. Now, and this is a point that we brought up during the show during the week, or on the show during the week, Central Michigan did give up 11 sacks. So we knew the offensive line was stellar, but thought they could work around it a little bit, and LSU had been struggling. Obviously, that's not the case. LSU dominates the game, ends up winning 49-21. It was good for Max Johnson to kind of get back, you know, to the field, to the timing, get the clock in his head right, because there's some big games coming down the pipe for LSU. They needed this one. Coach O needed this one. And when you look at this LSU team, the biggest question is the mental side of it. And it's the truth. You know, you go out to UCLA and play like that. You come back, you get McNeese, you get Central Michigan. Now you go to a Mississippi State team that's pissed off after losing to Memphis on the road, a team that beat you last year in the first game. We all remember that, how shocked everybody was after that. So how does LSU answer the bell there? And what if it doesn't go good early? You know, we've talked about how your team is when you hit adversity. That's when you find out really about them. So LSU with the big win there over the Chippewas of Central Michigan, beat them by the final score of 49-21. To get to 2-1 on the season with, like I said, a big matchup looming with Mississippi State. I'm just so glad we're getting into SEC play. So many good games, so many good matchups. And what's, you know, the parity this year, like I said, mentioned earlier, is I think it's going to be wild. And speaking of wild, Ole Miss Tulane. Ole Miss scores 61 points and none in the fourth quarter. And Tulane got shut out in the second half. You know, the same Tulane team that went up and dropped 35 on Oklahoma and lost by 5. Matt Corral, I mean, this game went exactly like you thought it did. Matt Corral went for 335. Jerry Neely ran for 105. Jonathan Mingo caught it for 136. And Matt Corral posts 7 total touchdowns. You don't think Coach Kiffin's trying to get him that Heisman? You don't think he's trying to bump the numbers up? And I don't blame him. I don't blame him. I mean, he scored 42 points combined in the second and third quarter. It's going to beat a lot of teams. Ole Miss, to me, still the defense. I've got to see him do it against a caliber offense that I wouldn't say is even elite, but is above average, that has the type guys that they have or that they're going to see in the SEC up front. And if you go back and watch this game, Ole Miss, schematically, did nothing but just run their stuff. And if you're a defensive coordinator, that's almost the scariest part. Well, you came out and just gave him the fastball and changeup for 4 quarters and dropped 61 on him. That shows you how fluent, and they cannot be artistic in the way they game plan and still score 61. It just scares the hell out of you if you're a DC, because Matt Corral is such a grasp with that offense. The chemistry they have, whether it's Braylon Sanders, you can go down the list, Ely out of the backfield, but Jeff Lebby and Lane Kiffin too. It's just kind of a perfect storm offensively with that quarterback, that OC, and that head coach at Ole Miss. And look, if Ole Miss can get 3 to 4 stops, 1 to 2 turnovers a game, I don't see a defense that right now outside of Georgia that could – and Bama, look – one game for Alabama, and we're going to talk about it, but I don't see a game outside of Georgia and Bama where a defense is going to be able to hold them under 40 points. I just don't see it. And that's why it's going to be fascinating to watch Ole Miss play. And speaking of Georgia, Georgia, South Carolina, knew it was going to be ugly. Ended up, it's a 30-point spread, ended up being 40-13, so a 27-point win. South Carolina scored 6 in the first and a touchdown in the fourth. Georgia dominated this game. Look, Georgia's got better players. It's very simple. Across the board. JT Daniels goes for 303. Kendall Milton, leading rusher, with 66. Adonai Mitchell, 77 yards. But when you look at Georgia, getting JT back was big. They didn't do anything too crazy. They pretty much ran their stuff. Like I was talking about Ole Miss, Georgia really ran their stuff. I think they're going to hold a lot of formational stuff and motional stuff that Todd Monken's going to hold for these bigger games down the stretch. And look, South Carolina, from a personnel standpoint, brought a knife to a gunfight. The kids fought. It shows you the type of respect they have for not only the University of South Carolina, but their head coach, Shane Beamer, who we love Coach Beamer, a guy we've had on the show. I think he's the right hire there. I think he's going to get him back to being competitive. But I just – Georgia to me – and I'm going to get to Alabama Ford in a second. But Georgia to me has the most dominant side of the ball in college football, and that's that defense. And when they're humming and when they're playing, they're really just – It's the perfect type player because they're big, they're strong, and they're fast. And in the front seven, I mean, you basically got guys that are Jordan Davis's size that can change direction unbelievably quick, that are unbelievably strong. All it takes is one hand to bring you down, and they play disciplined. That's the ingredients. That's the recipe right there. Can stop the run, can pass rush. N'Kobe Dean at linebacker. I mean, this front seven is loaded, and Georgia goes to 3-0, 1-0 in the SEC. Now.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
To the meat of the schedule yesterday in the SEC. Alabama beats Florida 31-29 in what was a crazy game. Excuse me. In what was a crazy game. Alabama goes up 21-3 in the first quarter. Looks like the route's on. Everything was working. They even threw a wheel route for a touchdown, almost in spite, in a huge jab of irony to Dan Mullen, the wheelist, as I call him, the wheelist out there. I mean, the man ran so many wheel routes last year. It's just kind of in his repertoire. Saw a couple this game, but they didn't really connect. First quarter, like I mentioned, Bama dominates. Showed a lot of guts by Florida. Shutting out Alabama in that second quarter. Winning the second quarter 6-0 to make it 21-9 at half. Shout out Cone for hitting that -7.5 first half. But that second quarter really kind of mucked the game up a little bit. You know, Alabama was kind of turning it into a track meet a little bit, up and down, up and down, up and down. And that second quarter kind of slowed it down, mucked it up, tightened it up. And then you come out in the third and you win it 14-7. Now you're within a score. I mean, now you're down six. You're down five. And you started putting game pressure on Bryce Young. Now, Bryce finished with 240 yards. Brian Robinson had 80 yards rushing. Emory Jones threw for 195. But watching this game, you know, Alabama, and you kind of see Miami now after losing 38-17 to Michigan State at home. Alabama's super talented. We know they're very well coached, but they looked mortal yesterday. And I sent out a tweet that said, I haven't seen Alabama struggle like this on defense in a while. And really what I was pertaining to was getting pushed around in the interior on the defensive line. And Henry Toa Toa really struggled yesterday. I mean, getting lost in gaps, missing tackles, you know, guessing. So I even saw a couple times where he false stepped before the snap because he was thinking so much. And if Alabama's going to give up, you know, because Florida's offensive line was a concern. If Alabama's front seven isn't what we thought they were, if I'm Georgia, I loved what I saw yesterday. That's the door opening. What's that sound? That's the door opening. Maybe we don't have to be the Harlem Globetrotters on offense to beat these guys. Because then you look on the flip side of that. You look at Alabama offensively against Florida. Didn't run the ball very well. And if you're not able to stop the run and you're not able to run the ball in these big games, it's going to be a problem. And now get it. Look, it's one game. Saban's going to coach them up. They got the players. Will Anderson did not look healthy to me. And Dan Mullen's game plan was phenomenal. You just see over and over again why Mullen is so respected in the coaching community, because he kind of blended it in his Mississippi State game plan against Alabama and his Florida game plan from last year a little bit, as much as he could without having Kyle Trask. Now, Emory Jones still missed on a bunch of passes. And I said this during the live stream yesterday. Alabama's going to get everybody's best shot. That's just the nature of the beast. Florida's not going to play like that every game. It's tough to get your guys up like that for half the games, let alone all the games. And Alabama, the hype kind of takes care of itself. And you got them at home. You got them at your place. Our house in the middle of the swamp. You literally got them at your place. So the excitement level and the hype, you're not having to tell anybody to hustle at practice, but you're not going to get that every game. It's just not how human beings work. And Alabama had to survive that one. And they did. And they did. Now, is this an invincible of an Alabama team as we thought? No. And if I'm A&M, boy, the emphasis on being able to run the ball just got that much bigger. As we talk about October 9th, October 9th, October 9th. Well, you look now and Bama looks a little mortal, like I said, but you got problems of your own you got to fix. And you got to clean your house before you can go over there and clean theirs. And Bryce Young will continue to grow. Thought Bill O'Brien called a really good game yesterday. But there's small things. That offensive line and pass pro against a legit pass rush. Can they hold up the whole game? The biggest question is, how's that offensive line going to fare against Georgia's front seven? That is a matchup. And we won't know. We won't know until probably the SEC championship game, but that is a matchup right there, my friends. That's one to write down in your handy-dandy notebook, because that's going to be a heck of a matchup. So I still, you know, like I said, Florida to me, that was their best shot, and Bama took it. Got up off the mat, swung back, ended up winning the fight. And that's what good teams do. That's what good teams do. All right, Auburn and Penn State. You know, when you watch a game, we always talk about there's four or five plays that decide the game. And in this case, it wasn't any different. And watching Auburn come out, you know, had the white face mask and all that stuff. Look, after the first play, that goes out the window. Starting offensively. I don't understand why Tank Bigsby wasn't more involved in the first half. And by the way, the trust they have in Jarquez Hunter, speaking of Auburn, to be able to put him in that situation and let him, you know, operate the way he did, shows you how much trust they have in him and how much talent they think he has. Auburn's offensive line struggled to run block. I mean, Tank ended up with 102 yards, but he's getting hit 1-2 yards. Past the line of scrimmage, Auburn just doesn't have the personnel up front. And for anybody that thought Auburn was going to go up there and dominate or anything like that, you can't. Brian Harsin doesn't have the ability to 3D print offensive linemen. And that's where Auburn's going to struggle. I thought in pass protection, they're a little better than I thought they'd be. On the edges, though, you know, whenever they were isolated, there was a bunch of times where there were just run-throughs. Auburn just doesn't have the guys on the offensive line. It's just the truth. To be able to set the pace. And you saw a couple drives where Tank hit a couple zone runs. You had a couple perimeter runs, which I thought they could have gone more to. But in the first half, I was surprised that they didn't go to Tank a little bit more and let him really get into one of those rhythms that he gets into. You saw it in the second half a little bit on a couple of those drives. But I was very surprised by that. Now, watching Bo Nix, made a couple good throws, made a couple questionable throws. But he doesn't have a ton of help at wide receiver, guys. I'm just going to tell you. You know, you look at Penn State, they had a guy. Dotson. Jahan Dotson. They had a guy. Auburn doesn't have a guy at wide receiver. They just don't. They just don't. They got some young guys that are talented. Cedric Jackson, I don't see him being able to be a big-time play guy. I mean, they went to him. They tried to. Just didn't do it. You know, fell down one time. Just running, just fell down. And it was a really good throw by Bo Nix. And then, you know, trying to work the back shoulders and doing stuff. But he just, you get your chance to prove it. And if you're not the guy, you're not the guy. And you hate to say it, but, you know, go look at number five. Number five's jumping up, one hand and catching and doing stuff like that. And, you know, Auburn just doesn't have that guy. They just don't. And it's the truth. You know, you didn't see a ton of, you know, Kobe Hudson, I believe, was the leading receiver. I'm going to get to that fourth down call here in a little bit. But Auburn, from a personnel standpoint, just doesn't have it up front and out wide at the wide receiver position. And as far as grading Bo Nix, was surprised he actually didn't run the ball more. You know, you saw the few quarterback runs designed they had that were effective, and then him, you know, kind of taking off. There was a third down he converted. But, you know, I would give him a B for the night. Thought he was putting too much air on the vertical balls, and then you saw when they would stick the back shoulder in the seam, you know, it was working. Surprised they didn't go back to that more. But it's when you're having to grade somebody at that position, you've got to take everything into an account. Is Bo going to be an elite Heisman type quarterback at Auburn? It doesn't look like that. It doesn't look like he's, at least not this year. Maybe if he comes back for his, you know, senior year next year, whatever happens. But until they get personnel around him at wide receiver that's able to win, that's able to get separation, you've got it at running back. I think you've got some tight ends that are pretty good too. But until he has those weapons and Brian Harsin, then that's going to be the trick. That's going to be the thing. Because Penn State, when you watch that game, while they mixed up coverages, they weren't really worried about Auburn's wide receivers, and they weren't worried about putting DBs in conflict with Auburn's wide receivers because they knew they weren't going to make them pay. And that's something you have to handle through recruiting. Just the truth. The offensive line, you have to handle it through recruiting. You watch Bama. You watch Georgia. You watch some of these, you know, quote-unquote elite teams, even though I don't think there's a ton this year. I mean, I'll give you an example. You know, Demetrius Robertson, who I think is a, you know, good player, you got to come up with that ball in between the two Penn State defenders that hits you right in the hands in crunch time. You can't be worried about getting hit. Guys at Georgia make that play. Guys at Bama make that play. It's just how it is. And until Auburn gets those guys, that play's not going to be made. And again, it's, you know, nature versus nurture. I don't know another way to say it. You're either going to make the play or you don't. But I promise you, five from Penn State's making that play. You could hit him with a Mack truck, but he's going to stay in there and take it. And sometimes you're ready for the moment. Sometimes you're not. And I've always, you know, my brother played receiver, and I used to joke with him, you know, look, man, you're going to get hit either way. You might as well catch the ball. I've never understood that. So offensively, that just Auburn is, it is where it is right now. You got two really great backs. One that's a freshman that you know you're going to have for a while out there jumping over guys. But the play call on 4th and 2. Now, up to that point, taking into consideration all I've just said about personnel, I didn't think it was a horribly called game by Mike Bobo. But that 4th and 2 call was a very bad call. You just run fade on 4th and 2. I don't know how Tank Bigsby doesn't touch that ball in some capacity. Or, like Herb Street, and I'll give Kirk credit, you know, why would you not run some sort of RPO that gives Bo options to throw and run that stretches out the defense? Instead, you throw a low percentage ball to a guy that, in my opinion, that's not the guy to even do it. But what would worry me more if I was an Auburn fan, it's not just that you called that. It's that you took a timeout, a valuable timeout that you really could have used to call that. I was shocked that was the call. I was expecting you were going to get sprint out. That's what I thought. You were going to get traditional sprint out, run it almost like a two-point play. And y'all know me, I'm going to tell you the truth. I was shocked that was the call. I don't know how that's the call against the Prisker kid who we know is a really good player. I just don't know how that one got through the lines of communication that, all right, this is the play we're going to go with. We're going to run a fade and try and dribble with our left hand to score. I mean, that call surprised me, you know, like I always tell you guys. You know, I'm not going to sit here and cover for somebody just to cover for somebody. I don't understand that call. I will not understand that call. I will never understand that call. So that was, to me, the biggest bugaboo that Mike Bobo had. And then before I get to the defense real quick and wrap this thing up, you know, the team that was going to win this game was going to be the team that made the least mistakes. And Auburn coming out and fumbling the first play of the first drive of the second half down 4. Just mistakes you can't make. Mistakes you can't make and expect to win these games. You just can't do it. And you do it because you're holding the ball, you know, like it's a hot potato instead of just tucking it. Little things. All those little things add up to huge things. And it doesn't take a ton of mistakes in games at this level. It just takes a couple. Just takes a couple. And you basically gave Penn State a free seven. So now, instead of that last drive, you getting to the 26 and letting Anders Carlson kick a 43-yard field goal to try and win the game, since you gave them seven, now you got to score a touchdown and go for two. Because that's what Auburn did coming out of halftime. They said, all right, not only did you guys get the ball to start, here's 7 points. And anybody that runs, and I've said this on the show, anybody that runs a trick play, Penn State ran a trick play on the first play. It's the worst time to run one. Auburn ran a trick play on the first play of the second half. As a defense guy, once we clear the first play, we're like, all right, don't worry about the trick play. Yet people still do it at a very high level on the first play. Blows my mind. Defensively, I thought Penn State did a really good job, you know, up front, not letting Auburn hit big chunk runs, just keeping them to the big runs being 11 to 12 yards. Auburn defensively came out, looked really good, and then Auburn never covered the tight end. They didn't cover the tight end. This is the most shocking thing. They spent two whole drives not covering the tight end. I don't know how that happens. You know, we talked about this defense is the strength of the team. This defense is the strength of the team. Can't say that now. Can't say that now. And, you know, I thought Papo played good. There's a couple guys up front on the defensive line, but there's no pass rush. And if you're an Auburn fan watching that, reminds you a lot of last year. And I'm going to give you a hint. If there's no pass rush and you're busting coverages, that's a death sentence. I thought the plan by Derek Mason was shocking. If you're going to rush three and drop eight, you better not be giving up whole shots in the zone. And you better not be busting coverages. I mean, Penn State's offensive plan was, we're going to run a little bit and just throw it to Dodson. And Auburn couldn't figure it out. Penn State was running the same plays a lot of time. And Auburn couldn't figure it out. The communication on defense yesterday for Auburn was not very good at all. And I don't know if it's Derek Mason having to come down from the booth or whatever, whatever. But that was bad. You got out thought by Penn State, really, on defense. And there were times when Auburn rushed four. How many sacks did Auburn get yesterday? Why don't you guys look that up? You got the turnover right before half that was big. But Auburn wasn't very disruptive on defense. They're just kind of like, all right, you're going to catch it and we're going to tackle you. And they really didn't put a lot of pressure on Sean Clifford. The one time they pressured him, Jacoby McClain almost knocked him out of the game. The guy threw a pick. But, if you're Derek Mason, there's a lot of questions to answer. There's a lot of questions to answer. Because you have better players on defense than Auburn has on offense, and you decided to play it safe. But you can't play it safe and bust coverages. Auburn just wasn't covering the tight end. Just awareness, simple stuff. Auburn played a ton of zone in that first half and was really getting torched. I mean, the guy's completing 90% of his passes. That wasn't the plan. Started playing some man in the second half. But I was just shocked. I was shocked at the conservative nature of the Auburn defensive plan. Yeah, you got to let Jacoby and them go. You got to let Owen and them go. You got to bring guys down. You got to put pressure on the offense. And we talked about it in the pregame, especially on early downs. That's when I'd pressure them. But Auburn, you know, has a long way to go. They've got a long way to go from a personnel standpoint. They need offensive line, wide receivers. They need pass rushers bad. Bad. Because if they're not able to get pressure on the quarterback, it's It's going to look a lot similar to last year, and it could get really ugly. And what Ole Miss will do to you, what A&M and Calzada will do to you if you give them time, it's not pretty. So, you know, you look at that game, we always say on the show, a lot of teams lose games, they don't win them. You feel like Auburn lost that game last night. But shout out to James Franklin and them for protecting home court in the whiteout. It was an unbelievable atmosphere. Got some great games this next weekend as we look forward to it. I appreciate you guys. Join me on the recap, whether it's Arkansas, whether it's Texas A&M. Make sure you subscribe to the Volume YouTube channel. Having a lot of fun over there. We're live every weekday from 3 to 4 Eastern. That is 2 to 3 Central, live from the College Football Hall of Fame. The interaction is great. We're reading y'all's questions. Just a quick look at next week's schedule. You got Southern Miss at Bama, Kentucky at South Carolina, Tennessee at Florida, Georgia State at Auburn, Texas A&M and Arkansas and Jerry's World in Dallas, Missouri at Boston College, LSU at Mississippi State, and Georgia gets to go hammer Vanderbilt next Saturday. Appreciate you guys joining us so much, man. Like I said, the interaction has been unbelievable. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you like too on YouTube. You can go to thejboyshow.com, get some great merch. Go to Pasquale'spizza.com. We've got another big sponsorship we're announcing this next week. So it's been another Sunday recap, another great weekend of college football. We've got a ton to discuss this week, starting tomorrow, like I said, live at 2 Central. Appreciate y'all. Have a great Sunday. Have a great rest of the weekend, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. I'm going. Gone.
The Volume.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season, on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.